Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Toy department time, everybody. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. And we're going to probably have to deliver another shorty today just because I got work stuff to get back to. But
blah, blah, blah.
I know. Work, work, work. It's, you know what's really exciting? Listening to somebody talk about their work troubles, right? Who doesn't love that? That should just be our podcast, just us talking about work troubles, yeah?
All work and no play makes Madden a dull boy.
But the challenge of doing a shorty could be interesting because we have about two weeks worth of things and like 17 shows to plow through between now and the end of the program.
Let's hurry up then.
So why don't we jump right in? Where is there? I have the list, but is there anything in particular that you would like to start with?
Let's go just in the Wayback Machine and do the Ollie and Cavett. For just a couple minutes, because I just thought, you know, I don't know how much there is to say about this, because people at this point are probably largely interested in or not interested in seeing Muhammad Ali talk. If you are the sort of person who is interested in seeing Muhammad Ali talk, I think this was really excellent stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask why you were, because this is one of those things where you sort of grabbed me and were like, hey, we should watch this.
I mean, I think it's a fascinating look at sort of who the person Muhammad Ali was.
Yeah, like when you explain it that way, it makes sense to me, you know, because it is so much of Muhammad Ali in his own words, which is fascinating. I don't know if I thought it was great as like – I don't know if I thought it was a great documentary, if that makes sense. But I do agree that the experience of watching Muhammad Ali talk in real time and watching this and just sort of enjoying the treasure trove of tape that I think neither you or I were aware existed, right?
Exactly.
That was really cool.
And watching this guy sort of just match wits with a dude who was paid – to host a talk show specifically because of his wits. You know, I found that delightful and fascinating and a part. And I think that when you say it's not a great documentary, I think I know what you mean. But here's what I think it did a pretty great job of is Muhammad Ali is one of the most documentaried subjects in my lifetime. Right?
Yeah.
Like, how many Muhammad Ali docs or, you know, 30-minute specials on ESPN or whatever have we watched about Muhammad Ali? I mean, I don't know about you. I had some VHS tapes that me and my friends in college, like, wore out of his old fights, like, just sort of documentary versions of old fights. So I don't know that the world needs a great Muhammad Ali documentary that tells the whole story of Muhammad Ali front to back in a, you know, relatively traditional or even non-traditional way. But as someone who's seen, you know, a dozen Ali documentaries, this was new territory.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And this is not necessarily new territory, like in terms of we've certainly seen documentaries that dealt a lot with Muhammad Ali's political phases.
Yes. Documentaries and feature films as well.
Yeah, but the experience of watching him talk and also sort of getting the side-by-side commentary from people who knew a lot about him and cared a lot about him and were sort of there at the time, I thought was interesting. And at times didn't necessarily reflect well on Cavett or the historian or whatever that talked, but I also thought were just sort of fascinating, sort of revealing little moments, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and I don't think any of it reflected especially poorly.
Yeah, I really, I was, you know, I'm not like, oh God, Dick Cavett, problematic, you know, but, right. But at the same time, I was like, well, I don't know, maybe you could look at that a little differently.
He has some, you know, he has some takes that ring pretty old man-ish.
Yeah, they were men of the time. You know what I mean?
He is an extremely old man.
Yeah.
And he, I also thought, like, you know, Dick Cavett is alive, which I also did not know. And
Dick Cavett is stoked that you know it now, though.
He is. But you know what? I thought he was also, he talked about him like an old man talking about a good friend that he's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he really cared for Muhammad Ali in a certain way. And he was obviously thrilled and delighted by the experience of getting to know him in, you know, in the context that he did.
Yeah. He seemed really happy in those like moments where they were like in the woods in New York at his like training site.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ali seemed to genuinely like and respect Dick Cavett.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, it's one of those things, like, and sorry to drift off out of toy department land here a little bit, but, like, I feel like liberals get mad at Bill Maher sometimes, you know, because
yeah,
he doesn't
well,
always follow orthodoxy, and he can be a dick, and he's an old man that sometimes has old man takes. But to me, like, I really feel like that sort of misses the fact that he has put so many voices on that platform, like really great, interesting, original voices of all sorts of stripes. You know what I mean? The really diverse group of interesting people have kind of walked through that show. And to me, there's a lot of value in that, whether you think Maher's a trash bag or not, you know? And I think Cavett was clearly, you know, Muhammad Ali really appreciated the fact that Dick Cavett would put him on TV and let him talk about this stuff when a lot of other people would have run screaming from it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I wouldn't say this is a great documentary, but it's an interesting watch. That's kind of where I landed on it.
Yeah. Again, like if you're just not it, if you're like Muhammad Ali content, no thanks. Then this is not for you.
Yeah.
Because this is not something that transcends the world in which it exists, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. While we're here, should we just tackle the other two documentaries we watched this week?
Yeah, those are a little fresher in my mind. Let's start with Dwayne Wade, because I know exactly what my take on this is. I would say this also fails to transcend the world in which it exists, since we just said that. If it made sense the first time, hopefully it makes sense again. But also, it's one of these documentaries that if I'm going to grade it as a film, it is very clearly the work of its subject.
Yeah.
And it is extremely subjective. We get the story of his struggle to, you know, get custody of his kids with pretty much zero from the other side.
I was really stunned at how one-sided all of that was.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, even if I have no criticism for Dwayne Wade about how he has handled his daughter coming out as trans, right? I think he's in pretty much every visible way been a hugely positive advocate for the community and entirely respectful of, you know, a very young person's very serious decision, which I think is probably both difficult and like a you know, morally commendable behavior. But that's not what this documentary is about. And even that is given the, like, this happened. Now let's get back to basketball. And that's fine. But that's what this is. Now, having said that, I loved watching it because I loved those. I love basketball. I love those times in basketball. It was a delight to relive them to some degree. I'd forgotten about so many things. You know, his year with the Bulls is like barely in my memory, and I watched pretty much every game, you know. Mm-hmm. His just how incredible some of the stuff with LeBron and Bosch was, and sort of the way it went down, and the way he made a conscious decision to sacrifice, like all those things had kind of faded in my memory, and I was thrilled by them. I also couldn't get past how crazy it is that you remember what Dwayne Wade looked like at 35.
Yeah.
That's how old LeBron is now.
Yeah. and he's still at the top of his game, which is great.
He is a marvel. He did a Wilt Chamberlain thing this year, which is like, you know, this other guy's pretty good. I think I'll lead the league in assists.
Yeah.
And he's like killing the league in assists, not just edging the best point guards. He's murdering the best point guards.
Yeah.
It's wild.
I felt a little differently about this doc. I think like if Dwayne Wade betting Shaq to grow out his hairline is like the you know, if I put that up here with my hand being like at the top of my hat, this documentary would put my hand below my belt in terms of Dwayne Wade content I enjoyed this week. Look, I have no issue with Dwayne Wade, the basketball player, and I have no issue with Dwayne Wade, the person. I think he seems like a pretty good dude on balance. But honestly, this movie wouldn't help me decide because this was a documentary that was just north of SpawnCon. You know what I mean? In terms of, you know, and I don't know. And again, I a big fan of Gabrielle Union, and she also seems like a really good person. So I'm not trying to cast aspersions, but it also sort of to me seems like something that she might have pushed him to do.
I don't know about that because they had clearly been shooting this since he got into the league.
They've been taking some footage for sure, absolutely. But it seemed to me like it stepped up a lot after she came into his life in terms of the amount and quality of the footage that they were taking.
Perhaps, but I
not that it matters. Look, not that it matters. I don't think she was like a nefarious thing. I think she just encouraged him. Yeah, you know
and
what I mean.
I don't think either of us are saying it's a nefarious like work.
No,
it's just I don't think Spawn. I think it is SpawnCon. Right.
It reminds
this is sponsored content. It's sponsored by Dwayne Wade Industries.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It reminds me of some of the stuff that LeBron does. You know what I mean? Where it's like I'm uninterrupted, but it's really I'm showing you my good side.
I was gonna say it's so funny you say that because that's what I was gonna say when you say Gabrielle Union. I would say the change was more when LeBron showed up.
Yeah, I could see that. You're right. I guess I don't need to parse blame. Blame is harsh. Look, it's not a terrible documentary.
It's basically not a documentary is the problem.
Yeah.
It's highlight footage of Dwayne Wade's life.
Yeah.
And but it's highlight footage.
The whole time I just want to be like, come on, man, be real with me. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like this is it's a video version of the slideshow you'd show at your retirement party or something, almost. You know what I mean? You know, obviously they addressed some negative things, but again, it was all to frame him in the most positive light. You know what I mean?
And there were three or four honest-ish moments from Dwayne Wade sitting and talking to the camera. You know, like there would be some challenges for a protagonist in a fictional film.
Right. Is it hagiography? Isn't that the word for what this kind of is? Right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. And I you know, I guess mileage may vary, but if you remember those years with fondness, it's not the worst watch.
Yeah. I have nothing against Dwayne Wade. I think he was a great basketball player. I think he's maybe even an underrated basketball player in the historical scope of things.
At his peak might be underrated anyway.
Yeah, but I was bored by this, and I think largely for that reason that I just felt like it was...
No, I mean, it is Dwayne Wade on Dwayne Wade.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. I don't need the myth, Megan, man. I don't.
Fair
you
enough.
Know what I mean? So
yeah, no, I can't argue with you.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I was at about that. How about Miles Davis? And I'm not remembering the actual name
Earth
of
the Cool. It's yeah. actually an episode of American Masters yes. on PBS, but it's a full length documentary, long documentary. Long as a matter of fact.
Maybe a little too long.
maybe a little too long.
Yeah.
And I ended up watching it in two sittings, but it's not too long in the way of like, here's what I would cut this 35 minutes.
Right. Agreed.
Because now, okay. I don't know where you're at on jazz music. My suspicion is you're not high on it.
I'm not high on it, but this doc was successful in making me go, man, maybe I really probably should need to just listen to a bunch more Miles Davis. You know what I mean? So
he is in the musical genius category with the Princes and the Lennon and McCartneys. And
he's just an all-timer. You know what I mean?
He is.
Undisputed yes. all-timer, you know?
And for that matter, with the Beethovens and Mozarts, like, yeah. there are just people in the world of music who are gifted in a way that is inexplicable. And he is one of those people. And this, unlike the Dwayne Wade documentary, is a detailed and, I thought, pretty balanced view of a complicated person who was an unbelievable musical genius.
Yeah. It did make me wonder. I feel like there's probably a really incredible Miles Davis fictional biopic that may exist. I don't know.
Tito made one a couple years ago that I never watched, but I always wanted to.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
It's called, I want to say Miles Ahead just because I can't get the documentary out of my head. It was Miles Ahead.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Okay.
It's a 5-year period in the 70s. Oh, no. So here's what it is. It's a story about after his like time off from music, he like went on a search for a stolen session tape with a music reporter.
Yeah.
Cheadle co-wrote it and starred in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Lakeith Stanfield's in it. I think I want to say pre-Atlanta Lakeith Stanfield. It's 2015.
In fact, he's billed as Keith Stanfield.
Yeah.
There you go. If I remember correctly, he got a lot of positive response for it.
I vaguely think that I may have seen this.
Really? I never watched it. 73% on Rotten Tomatoes, so not all terrible.
Right. Well, I bet it's streaming somewhere. Maybe I'll try to check that out. Oh.
Yeah. But anyway, I you're right. There's a great biopic to be made if that's not that sounds more like a specific story yeah. than a biopic.
I'm just looking at Gary Clark Jr. is the guitar player in the band, and Esperanza Spalding plays bass in the band in the movie.
That's awesome.
And Herbie Hancock. So yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna watch and seek that out.
I mean, so here's the thing. I love jazz, as you might imagine. I mean, to me,
yeah, jazz seems like your kind of thing.
Well, they get into a lot of what I love about music in this documentary, and a lot of it is stuff you don't like about music and improvisation and stuff like that. But, you know, this, not to be too obnoxious or put too fine a point on it, but, you know, without Miles Davis, there's no Fish, there's no Rush, there's none of these, there's no prog rock or like, I don't know. The level of improvisation that he introduced to popular music was completely unheard of.
I feel like Rush might have existed without Miles Davis, but I get your point.
maybe Genesis would have been a better example, you know, early Genesis.
Because they're so like, precise and, for lack of a better word, like aggressively white. You know what I mean?
Well, they're precise, but, you know, but there's just there's a level of experimentation to the sort of melodic exploration.
Yeah, it's experimentation, but it doesn't necessarily feel like improvisation, if that makes sense.
No, I don't think it's live improvisation, but it's experimentation at a level that I just don't think really existed before Miles Davis.
Yeah, fair enough.
So much, and I think, you know, that hits home almost from the first scene of the movie before he ever picks up a horn when you're like, Jesus, he's born in the 20s. Like, music was just not – when he starts playing, music is a totally different thing than it is now as we understand it.
Yeah. By the way, would With not have guessed that he grew up rich in the 20s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? First of all, that anyone grew up rich in the 20s is pretty wild, but a black man certainly, right? So
yeah. And I think it colors a lot. Like, I think that absolutely, in my mind at least, is a big part of the bitterness that he not only felt, but that became so deeply seated in him when he was treated poorly just because of the color of his skin in any number, you know, in harsh or not harsh ways.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's so much here about, again, a very complicated and not always admirable man, and also so much from the music world to help people who don't know him understand just how unbelievable. And I keep using those words because it's just, again, there are these people, the princes of the world, and of course I'm thinking of him because they collaborated, but these people that are just not of this world and are, it's impossible that they exist.
Yeah.
And that Miles Davis is in that category.
Yeah. There's a, you know, a thing that a lot of times when I talk about like Carlos Santana, you know, where it like I'm sure you've seen Santana play live at some point, right? Where it just feels like the guitar is like an extension of his body. You know what I mean? And like the music is just sort of flowing through him and everything comes out. It just seems so natural.
Again, that's why I love improvisation. That's why I love Fish so much is because when you have four people doing that in concert, and that's what you kind of had, slightly more formed than like the middle of a 20-minute Fish jam, but spiritually and philosophically, that's the same thing that Miles was doing on Kind of Blue, which you have to like. I don't know if it's possible to understand without living through it, even for me, what that album is and how insane it is that was something he just showed up with a couple sketches of like basic, you know, central melodies.
Yeah, the sketches thing is wild, by the way, that he's like drawing pictures for people. And
yeah, and you know, it's just he's a marvel of an artistic marvel.
Yeah, he is, and this documentary will help you appreciate it for sure, 100%.
And if it takes two sittings, no problem. It's a ton of interesting information with a ton of people who actually lived through it. You know, like I thought this, there was definitely historians who didn't have contact, but there were a ton of people in this documentary talking to you who were talking about their direct, meaningful, direct experience with Miles Davis.
Yeah. Including, you know, people he was married to. So
yeah,
So yeah, I would I'd recommend that one. It's probably a bit of a tough get if you haven't gone to it yet. I'm gonna guess it's gonna air on PBS a couple more times. So you know,
yeah,
jump in and grab a DVR there.
Totally, they cycle through those things. It's an American Masters, and I don't know. PBS probably has some streaming outlet if you get a PBS in your cable package.
Yeah,
but I would highly recommend it. You know. They'll probably have it at your local library sooner than later.
Yeah, I would say, I guess it will come streaming eventually, but jump on it now if you want to see that.
Yeah, really good.
I think we should maybe jump to Better Call Saul because I feel like that it's pretty quick to just say, wow, it's still really good. You know what I mean?
Okay. I feel like this is, in a lot of ways, I don't want to say it's a better show than Breaking Bad, but it is a more impressive
feat of craftsmanship.
Yes. Over the course of season four
I think it's season five. I want to say
wherever we are, the slow build to what is now every bit as like physically dramatic and exciting as most of Breaking Bad was.
Yeah.
Somehow
it's season five.
Somehow it makes it like it feels it just feels like a greater accomplishment in some ways. But it is so good right now. It's so tense. There's so much on the line in so many ways. Like, I can't. I'm just on the razor's edge every time. Is it Rhea Seahorn?
Yeah.
It's on screen because what is going to happen to her?
Right. I mean, just sort of the, you know, knowing where we're at, it just feels like, right, there's this some sort of guillotine that's almost like floating over our head, right? Where you know, yes, that she doesn't make it to Breaking Bad. So
we are riding up a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And it's just, we're at a point now in season five where it is so, it has been such a long uphill climb that it feels like the drop must be coming.
Yeah. So, and the show continues to be really great at, like, the little moments, you know what I mean? And all the little things that lead up to this.
With, yeah, the phones.
You know,
like he's running like a circus tent. With Huel as his like really crappy carnival barker.
Mm-hmm.
it's an excellent show.
This to me feels like the kind of thing that Scorsese was going for when he talked about The Irishman as like being an accumulation of detail. You know what I mean? Where it's like,
yeah,
little moments that add up to this thing, but it's the way that the story has unspooled. And look, people certainly had complaints about the pacing of it at the beginning. I feel like all of that has almost vanished at this point. And there's also this amazing thing because this world is so built out now through, this a television show and a movie and five seasons of this prequel. That you get all of these people that pop up in this kind of like holy crap, you know, like Hank and Gomez are going to be in the next episode, you know, and that, you know, so much about who these people are and what they become that it there's a whole other level that the show works on that's really exciting. And I'm also just excited by the idea that, you know, they know that it's ending after next season. And I'm sure they know exactly how the show is ending. I'm sure they knew that from the beginning, right?
Because yeah. Even if they didn't know it from the beginning, once you establish the end point, the guys like this, they know what it is.
Right. And it's the hands around the show are so sure, you know what I mean, that I can't wait to see where they guide us to.
Yep.
Man.
Yep. It's all very exciting. Very, very exciting.
What is the best show on television in your mind right now? You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's Better Call Saul. I don't like live right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's playing right now.
I mean, you know, unless I'm allowed to say the NBA season.
I'll take Better Call Saul over the current NBA season, I have to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wait for the playoffs, buddy.
You know, the only thing, like, I mean, 2 weeks ago, I would have said The Outsider.
Right.
And The Outsider is still great, and I'm really excited to see how it ends, but I don't think.
I was going to say, it's not a criticism of The Outsider. Yeah. We're going to talk about that next week. I am on the edge about that as well. I can't sit back in my seat when I'm watching it, but, you know, we're. Again, the investment of the four seasons of Better Call Saul and what it all means at this point is, I don't think anything can really match that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like just step aside for
what else would even be in the conversation?
Well, you know, if we're talking about currently, and we'll get to this in homework tonight, but there's a, you know, new season, Better Things starts tonight. I think you could maybe.
Right. So we'll find out. Would you count? How would you include Netflix or Hulu shows in this?
Yeah, I don't think any of the things on Netflix currently on, you know, I mean, what I guess it depends on what you define by currently. If you're talking about every Netflix show ever, you know, maybe
or even if you're talking about the year, like Unbelievable was really excellent.
Yeah.
So that would maybe be in the conversation.
It'd be in the conversation, but it's hard for me to see that.
No, you're right.
We'll talk about this at some point. I think I love this season of Sex Education.
Yes.
But you know, it's not Better Call Saul.
Did we not talk about that?
I don't know that we've talked about the end of it. We did talk about the show, yeah.
Oh, so. Well, I don't know that it needs any extra special attention, but yeah. it's a great show.
It is a great show, and I thought the season was particularly good, and an improvement on the first season. So
I think so too, and yeah. That was, you know, it was a high bar.
And yeah, look, there are plenty of great shows, but I don't know that anyone is. It's hard for me to think of one that's this great. You know, well, I think Atlanta. When Atlanta comes back, that's in the conversation, but it's not on right now. So,
right. Right. Is Atlanta coming back? Do we know
eventually,
that?
Yeah, but I don't think it's till next year.
Okay. Let's get to these last two shows.
All right.
Speaking of Hulu and
Netflix. I have three shows.
Or three.
The
there's yeah. three. There's one on ABC as well.
Isn't
it? Is it ABC?
No, I don't. Well, maybe you have something on ABC. Oh, AMC is what you're thinking of, right?
Oh, sorry. Yes, AMC.
Yeah, so there's four things actually still. So let's go.
Let's go.
All right. You want to run to Hunters now?
Yes.
Sorry, I just got a text. I apologize for that.
That's the problem for me. I'm all good.
Hard to include work there. I'm definitely curious as to where you're at on this, and I would almost frame it for me. I feel like had Inglourious Basterds not ever existed, I might have a different perception of this show.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is I enjoyed this show. I'm sticking with it. I'm going to keep watching it. Conceptually, yep. It's really great. But I did at times found myself wishing that there was maybe more of a more gonzo, giddier version of the show or of the thing that it is. You know what I mean? Because I think when you have, the all-time, this goes to 11 kind of actor in Al Pacino heading a group of Nazi hunters, right? Like you sort of think, oh, this thing's going to go off the rails in the way that Inglourious right. Basterds kind of did.
Yes.
And that's not really, at least for me, through I think I've watched three, that is not what the show is. It's often sort of like...
This is
contemplative. There's a lot of Jewish guilt in this show. Is what I feel like, you know what I mean?
I think it's to your point. It is maybe I have to be Jewish to say this, but it is pretty hilarious that Al Pacino as lead Nazi hunter is the most understated Al Pacino I think I've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely turned way more up to be the football coach in any given Sunday than he is to be the Nazi hunter guy. You know what I mean?
It's not even comparable. Yeah. Like all the roles I'm thinking of, he's an angstier blind man,
way angstier,
looking for ass than he is. Like, I mean, it and again, at look. Sometimes I think, especially over the last 25 years, we forget Al Pacino is a fantastic actor.
Yeah,
and I am not by any means saying he's not good in this role. I think he's quite good in this role.
And I'm sure he's playing it in the way that the show has asked him to play it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It just seems
It's
just weird.
Not a criticism.
Yeah.
It's just somewhat curious.
Because I've spent a lot of Al Pacino's career sort of wishing he would play it, you know, a little more understated. I don't think I ever thought of a time where I'm like, God, I really wish he would go more full tilt. So,
But... I think you kind of said this too. It's very well done, and I don't rule out the possibility that there is a slow build of both, you know, the show and Al Pacino's intensity.
Yeah, agreed.
So we'll see. I do think I will continue to watch it, although I could not watch it in Costa Rica. It was not available on Costa Rican Amazon, nor could I download it. So.
Oh, I didn't know Costa Rican Amazon was a thing.
Well, all the streaming stuff is different in different countries.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Of all the licensing.
Yeah. I was just reading. I'm on the Better Call Saul page still, and there are some countries where you can get it on Netflix the day after
the
episodes air, which is amazing.
Yeah. Costa Rica is one of those countries, actually.
we are not. By the way, also, episode 6 of this season of Saul is called Wexler v. Goodman, and that's all I know about it, but that sounds incredible.
I mean, I think we all know what that is, and it does sound incredible.
Yeah. Yep. And then episode 7 is called JMM, and I'm in for that too.
Oh man.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So look, I think Hunters is pretty good. It's a pretty good show.
Pretty good.
It's a pretty good show. It gets kind of dark. And
it's pretty dark.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a heavy watch serious, at times.
And I think frankly, like, there's never a bad time to remind people how dark and serious Nazis are.
Yes, fair enough. That's fair enough. And I do think that is maybe one of the reasons, A, because Inglourious Basterds exists, and you don't just want to make that again. But I also think maybe our current moment, the people making the show maybe felt some obligation to sort of remind people that Nazi stuff's real dark, man. It's real dark. So.
Yeah. And not in a cartoony way, really.
Yeah, exactly. In like, yeah. And that's exactly the way I would put it. So this show has plenty of that. And it does have fun at times, too.
Oh, yeah. No, and it's actually quite funny at times. It's a really well-done show. And I like all of the actors in the sort of merry band of Nazi Hunters.
I wanted to ask you in particular what you thought of Josh Radner's performance.
I think he's supposed to be a doofus.
He is. I also think he's like Josh Radner is trying to play aggressively against type. You know what I mean?
I think that's why he took it.
Yeah.
And I think that can be a little jarring, but I don't think he's bad at it.
I don't think so either. It's just funny to me because I have very strong feelings about Ted as the character.
Yeah. But it's a little jarring in that way, but it's not a bad performance.
Yeah, agreed. Good for him. You know what? I guess maybe that is an opportunity for us to segue from Ted to Marshall, who is on TV.
That's a great job by you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Who's on TV in a new role in a show that he, I believe, had a lot to do with its creation. It's based on an experience of his life. Called Dispatches from Elsewhere. Did you happen to catch Jason Segel on Bill Simmons last week?
I did, but I you know, sometimes I get distracted and I don't necessarily remember what he said about Dispatches from Elsewhere.
Well, they didn't actually talk about it all that much.
Okay, so then, yeah, I think I didn't miss anything.
I think much to Jason Segel's chagrin. but they did talk a lot about, and I'd sort of forgotten. You know, you think him as a performer, but you forget that he really wrote a lot of those sort of. You know, and this, I think, is a. This show is based on an experience he had, I believe, in San Francisco, where he found an ad, you know, that had one of those like little cut off strips of paper with a phone number, and he called the number, and it led him to this weird social experiment. Which I don't think is exactly.
He directed too. Wow. He produced, wrote. He's starring, and he directed the first episode.
Yeah, and he came up with the story based on sort of that experience. I just think this is a really interesting show. I don't know that.
I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, I don't know that I love it yet necessarily.
Okay.
But I'm fascinated by it, and I think it's unlike anything on television. And I see greatness. The potential for greatness is there for sure.
I think I have exactly the same feeling, but I would describe myself as loving it because I don't know how else to describe all those things you just said.
Yeah,
like there's nothing here yet, really, but it's exciting. It's bizarre. It's both funny and sort of heartbreaking at times. It's one of the weirdest casting combinations. Like, if I told... I mean, okay, so I would be super interested in this elevator pitch, but you have to admit it's weird. If I tell you Jason Segel, a young trans woman you've never heard of, Andre 3000, and Sally Field are going to team up in some sort of bizarre, possibly magical social experiment.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you said they all walked into a bar, I'd be like, this is a premise for a really interesting joke, for sure. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. And we've only, I mean, the first two episodes are named after the first two characters you meet.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we're going to get a Sally Field episode.
Oh, we are.
Andre 3000 episode,
I'm pretty sure that's
it. I bet we are.
Yeah.
And what an interesting thing to do and way to go about a show. And is it Richard, is it Grant?
I'm not sure. You're talking about the guy that plays the main guy from
the English guy.
Yeah. Who opens the show. I love that sort of form too. And the way that imagine yourself.
Fascinating casting and the sort of meta way in which he introduces the show. And then you can't tell if he's there or it's a video. Like it's clearly, and I'd say deliberately, a like mind bender thing. It reminded me of Lost in some ways.
Yeah.
Like the Jejun Institute with the friggin' whatever it's called. How can I not remember the people in Lost?
You're talking about the oh my god, yeah. This is
shame on both of us. There's too much television in the world.
Yeah.
The company, the evil company, or are they evil in Lost? That has their name on everything, right? That's kind of what it felt like. But also, it seems mild spoiler clear that he's running both sides, right?
Yeah.
So like, there are so many questions and so few answers right now. But I couldn't be more interested in the next episode.
Dharma Institute, wasn't it?
Good job.
Thank you.
Did you Google it?
I did. I started to, but I didn't actually. I just remembered as I was like reading stuff.
Yes.
So I pulled it out myself, I guess.
The Jejun feels like the Dharma Institute.
Yeah, I agree. You know, this show sort of reminds me. I feel like if Legion had been more successful for me, it would feel a little bit like this show. And I thought that
the first season of Legion, we were similarly excited, right?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I feel like I was pretty sure you would love it because it also feels like it has a little bit of like the Lodge 49 DNA of weirdness. And I don't know if that's just sort of the AMC-ness of it, but there's a little bit of that. You know what I mean? Like, just a little
totally
bit of
right.
that, like, quirky, the same sort of quirky vibe about this show. You know what I mean?
Yes, and the same sort of, like, is there magic, or are these people just messing with each other? And, but I think, to your point, where Legion, I think, slipped in, certainly by middle of season two or so, and where Lodge 49 is maybe not even trying to have any sort of... It's not as like, what's the word I'm looking for? Magnetic as,
yeah. Or as lighthearted like Lost. Necessarily. You know what I mean?
What's that?
Oh, sorry. I thought you were comparing to Lodge 49. Excuse me, sir. Go ahead.
I was.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I meant Lodge 49 is not as magnetic as Dispatches from Elsewhere or like as Lost was when it was really weird and interesting.
Yeah.
You're not. Yes, there's a mystery, but it's all kind of goofy, lighthearted fun.
Yeah.
And this feels, it's frankly, in some ways sillier, but in some ways deeper. And that, I think, is what's cool about it. I am totally enchanted by the two episodes of this show that I watched.
Yeah. I'm excited to see where this thing goes, for sure. It's, like I said, it's like nothing else on TV. And
I also think, like, for whatever it's worth, not that there's anything, specifically tangible about this show that I can identify, but there is something about the entertainment we all grew up watching, right? And Siegel's right in between us, age-wise. And I think, like, this is a weirdness born of sort of our generation, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
I'm not sure there are other generations that would not appreciate but experience that group of four people in the same way as us.
Yeah. So the show, by the way, is based on a documentary called The Institute, which did happen in San Francisco. And I don't know. Now I feel like I might want to try to watch that too.
I feel like we should wait to watch that until this is over.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, because I don't want to mess anything up. Okay. What else do we got? We got, oh, Gentified on Netflix. This is a lot of buzz about this, although not so much buzz that I would actually get the name correct. Because it's certainly a very modern and topical comedy. Did you find it to be a good one?
Gentified, we're talking about?
Yeah, Gentified.
Yeah. Is that enough of an answer?
No, I would say that's fair. I would say that's fair. It's one of those things where you're like, well, this is definitely a story that is not really been told on television, and that's cool.
It's yes,
but that doesn't mean it's great. You know what I mean?
It's not bad.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sound like a dirtbag Hollywood producer, but I guess maybe there's something of like, this is why you want a star attached to your show thing.
Hmm.
In part because just sometimes they're stars because they're good at this.
Yeah.
And no one's bad here, but I watched two or three episodes and there's nothing that grabs you really.
Right. And
is that fair?
In a world, you know, with just so much TV, that's a tough spot to be in, you know?
Yeah. If you're going to be like a sitcom, I mean, it's a sitcom. If you're going to be a sitcom, especially a streaming sitcom, like, you need to hook me certainly by episode two, if not by episode one, in a way that I don't just wait for the next episode to come on. I click it when it's saying, like, next episode in 15 seconds. I just click it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and this just doesn't have that. There's it. You know what it feels like? And I don't want this to sound too disrespectful, but, like, it's almost like a diorama, you know, like a really nice diorama without like a centerpiece of any kind. Like, it's just a scene. It's a nice, it's colorful. And it, like you said, it's a story about a part of the world that is not often represented, which is cool, but there's no there.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. I'm looking at the executive producer for the show and stuff that they've worked on. And, you know, she's definitely a professional person, so good. But I'm with you that I don't know. I feel like maybe in surer hands this would have been a better show, but it didn't quite click for me. Go ahead.
And I feel a little bad because it's not bad.
It's fine.
It's totally watchable.
It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pete Davidson.
Ah, yes.
Pete Davidson did an Netflix special. Thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this, you know, I think maybe we talked about this when we did this. I went to see Pete Davidson do stand up for Netflix. I had to sign an NDA and all of that stuff. They definitely filmed it. And so, you know, I thought at some point I would see it on Netflix. It was this. But the one that you saw was the one. I must have seen the warm up show so that they could go to New York and tape the real show where he'd wear a suit and stuff. You know what I mean? So it was weird for me because I knew all the jokes. I was also realizing, oh, I'm definitely not going to be on television at any point during any of this or recognize any of this stuff around me. But I had heard all this material before. So it was a very interesting experience for me to watch. I, you know, I enjoyed the jokes in real time and I enjoyed them again a second time.
He's very funny. I think he's pretty insightful at times and other times incredibly silly. I find the way he tries not to laugh at himself pretty charming. I liked it. I you know, it's not Eddie Murphy delirious and it's not, you know, what's her face, Nanette. But
no. It's also like I think we forget sometimes, and maybe Eddie Murphy's a fair comparison in this sense, like this is the work of like a 23-year-old, right? You know what I mean? And it's, you know, the very end of it, he's like, all right, I'm going to tell some 9/11 jokes now. And everybody laughs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then he does it. And it's yeah. And they are funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, and
that's a real know, skilled comedian that can do that, you know?
It is. He has the there's no benefit. He gets to do that in part, I think, because he experienced personal tragedy on that day.
Yeah.
But he's found a really smart, funny way of talking about it, which is incredibly skillful. And he also, like, finds a way to present just purely upsetting information in a funny way.
Yeah.
You know? Did you stay tuned for the credits?
Yes. I was going to say that I thought the credits were some of my favorite parts. Like, just seeing pictures of him being a guy. You know what I mean? Like,
but at the end of the credits, did you stay tuned for the story?
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, he just comes back out and he's like, the special's over, but I want to tell a story about my dad. It's not even a joke. And he just tells another story about his dad's crazy friend telling him something that, like, did not improve the memory of his father.
No, that's your dad.
Very dark. But you know, it's not a joke, really, but he just presents it in a way that, like, you laugh with him.
Yeah.
And I don't know. He's very talented. Like you said, he's pretty young. Even the Ariana Grande stuff, like, you watch it figuring you're getting some of that, right?
Yeah. It's one of those things where you're like, oh, I bet Netflix told him if you want that kind of – you want that Netflix cash, you're going to have to come with the Grande stories. You know what
Grande.
I mean?
Yeah. But he doesn't – he never really insults her. He never really takes shots or –
Well, he does call her an evil genius.
What's that?
He does call her an evil genius, I think, a few times.
Yeah, but even that the things that he says that make her an evil genius, you know, are it's funny. It's not, and it's ultimately all about him, right?
Right.
Like he never goes after her, I guess would be the way to say.
No, when he does, it's like light, like, you know, she ruined Starbucks for me. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing.
Right.
So.
Right. And it's really about him because he's, you know, being self-deprecating with the whole thing. I just, for such an odd duck, he is a very charming guy.
Yeah.
And also very good at this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would give it a recommendation for sure.
I'd recommend it. I think this is going to be the Pete Davidson you're going to see more because I got a feeling he's going to be on Saturday Night Live for like another 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Like he is.
Well, but as he sort of repeatedly pointed out, like, hasn't it always felt like that?
Yeah. Like, they don't know how to use him. I don't think he's all that happy there. And I would be really surprised if he's on that show next season.
All right. We'll see.
Although I did notice that once he started complaining publicly, like, he wound up in a couple more sketches last week. So who knows? We'll see.
Yeah.
But that could also have been Mulaney. By the way, I think Saturday Night Live has generally been really pretty poor the last year or so ish, but the Mulaney ones. This last week was pretty good.
Saturday Night Live has been poor the last how many years has it been on?
All right. Well, if you want to roll that way, that's fine.
Seriously, is it 35 years it's been on?
Years? I think at times it's an underrated show. We're just not in one of those times right now.
In my opinion, it's been pretty bad for like since the first two.
Yeah.
It's been a rough go.
Lauren needs to figure out how to reset with the stunt casting and just they need a new approach to the topical stuff. Unfortunately,
I guess, or you just maybe we don't. Here's my thing. I don't think you can actually recreate the real experience of like a live improv sketch show on television. Like the ones that have done well are like way more written sketches and produced.
Well, like now, but I mean, I think they did a pretty good job and recreated that for 25-ish years, right? You know what I mean?
This is my point. Like, I'm saying I don't think they did. It was such a novel concept to most of the world at that point that even the, you know, 80% or whatever version of it was still pretty impressive to people. But like, you know this. You've seen improv in Chicago and LA. Like, there's something just different about being there. It doesn't require the same level of like.
But I think that's true of stand-up comedy and on television in general, right? Like, I, you know, look, yeah, I love we had just talked about the Pete Davidson show, which I got to see on television and I got to see in person, and it's always better in person. That, of course, I agree with that. I think
that effect has always been bigger with specifically a show like Second City with way less talent is just always better than an episode of Saturday Night Live. Mm. Like, I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, see, I don't know that, like, I mean, I understand what you mean, and I'm not necessarily arguing that point, but I do think that my take on it is that peak Saturday Night Live, whenever that is, and whatever it is for you, because it is one of those things that sort of everyone sort of has their own Saturday Night Live, you know what I mean? Depending on when they grew up and or what they came up with, you know what I mean? But peak Saturday Night Live, the sketches that you love or the things, whatever those are, is really great. The problem is just there's so much of it, you know? Show's been out for 45 years. It's very uneven. Even episode to episode, generally there are a couple of good things and a couple of just really awful things. You know what I mean? So a lot of it depends on what you measure, you know, you remember. You know what I mean? So
yeah, but that's the only point I'm making, really. Is not that, look, there's probably not a single season of Saturday Night Live without at least one great sketch. You know, these people are the best at what they do. Right. I'm not disputing any of
that. The awful things go down a lot easier in person, I think, which is also sort of why, you know, there's an audience a live audience that really, I think, is genuinely laughing through all of these shows, even the really bad ones. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's kind of my point, is like, there can be stuff that plays great in the sketch room that's just never going to work on TV. And pretty much every season of Saturday Night Live is rife with sketches that did not work on TV.
Yeah. Well, and
which is not a great endorsement of a TV show as a whole.
I guess. I think all sketch comedy shows are, I think it's fair to say, are rife with, you know, I mean, and even stuff that's like Broad City, you know what I mean? Like,
totally.
You know, Broad City has moments of incredible brilliance and hilarious. It's Always Sunny, you know what I mean? Has the same. And then there are some things that didn't work or weren't that funny. You know what I mean? Like, it's what it is.
Yes, but it just plays different when it's a fictional TV show than when, like, you're just watching people fail. I don't know. Right, anyway, this is not a road. I have weird takes on sketch comedy because I went to a lot of Second City as a kid, I think, and it spoiled me in a way for the experience of it, more so than the talent.
And beyond that, we got to go. So let's jump into homework. We got all the shows in, and we have a ton more to give you.
Give me the quick list
week.
Of homework, because we don't have time to talk about each of these things. Just run through it.
All right. Well, I'm going to just, I want to emphasize that Better Things is one of the best shows on TV, and that returns tonight on FX.
Excellent. Let's do it.
The Outsider wraps up, as we mentioned earlier. Devs, which is a FX show on Hulu. Right now that they are corporate cousins, FX got bought by Disney as part of the bundle. You know what I mean?
They're really eating it up together. They're mushing themselves into one another.
Yeah, and so the FX is going to be making a fair amount of content specifically for Hulu. And also on the plus side now, all FX shows, I believe, are going to be available next day on Hulu.
Correct.
Which is cool. But anyway, Devs is streaming only, and it stars Nick Offerman. And it looks interesting. We're going to check that out. I believe Dave is also an FX show, right?
That's
with Lil
right.
Dicky?
Yes.
That actually premiered last night. But we're going to talk about that. Everybody's Everything. I've already forgotten what this is. What is Everybody's?
It's a Little Peep documentary.
Oh, the Little Peep documentary. Yeah, okay, great.
That you were so excited about.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's getting really good reviews, and it seems interesting, so whatever. And we went on a documentary tear. I Am Not Okay With This, which is from the End of the Fucking World guys, right?
Yes, correct.
More documentaries, Women of Troy, about Cheryl Miller and the USC women's basketball team in the, I guess that would be 80s, right?
Yeah, late 80s, I want to say.
That premieres on Tuesday, and Marc Maron also drops a Netflix comedy special called End Times Fun on that Tuesday as well, and that is a very long list of homework. I don't know where the hell I'm going to find the time.
I gotta go start watching stuff.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.